Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
House Bill 370 is a fairly simple reorganization measure that will allow for major impact within the Department of Agriculture. In a nutshell, what it does, it allows the Division of Farm Safety and Rural Health within the Office of Ag Marketing, and it also allows for the implementation of the Office of Ag Economic Development.
A former high school ag teacher sponsoring Kentucky State Bill 370, Representative J.T. Payne.
Several of you all in your own districts have probably seen the initiatives that the Department of Agriculture has been implementing, from the Food is Medicine campaign to a focus on rural health and farmer mental health, as well as farm safety programs. This will allow the continuation of those programs.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The timing of this hearing is critical. Our producers are dealing with a historic high pathogenic avian influenza outbreak, harmful state mandates like Proposition 12, and difficult market conditions, along with a slew of other issues.
G.T. Thompson is chairman of the House Ag Committee at a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing on livestock, dairy, and poultry.
Now, this hearing today is a great opportunity for us to learn from the experts in front of us about the best way to combat these problems. Over the last 3 years, I've had the privilege to travel with many of my colleagues, actually, to more than 40 states and one territory to learn about farmers' and ranchers' top concerns. Given the size and diversity of the livestock industry, we need a full picture of on-the-ground conditions and an honest assessment of what is and isn't working to ensure we appropriately arm producers with the tools they need for success in the coming years. Now, I'm proud of the Farm Food and National Security Act of 2024 that we passed out of committee on a bipartisan basis last year. We increased funding for the three-legged stool, including language on negotiating animal disease regionalization agreements, improved investment opportunities for livestock auction owners, doubled funding for MAP and FMD programs, and provide a fix for Proposition 12, just to name a few. Unfortunately, for numerous reasons outside of my control, we weren't able to get this bill across the finish line, and America's producers are the one that's paying the prices. We cannot let this year be a repeat of last. I look forward to hearing from you all today about the issues you're facing and the provisions you'd like to see included in a new farm bill.
Thompson is chairman of the committee, the ranking member from Minnesota, Angie Craig.
I am concerned about the state of the industry. We have animal disease outbreaks, high input costs, a holdup of USDA cost share payments, and a destabilized trade environment. None of these things provide certainty for producers or make life more affordable for American families. Some of this uncertainty could be reduced by a bipartisan farm bill, one that strengthens our animal disease preparedness by investing in the research and infrastructure needed to effectively combat animal disease outbreaks. We talked about the many reasons we need a bipartisan farm bill last month in our full committee hearing, so I won't belabor the point, but I hope we can navigate through a partisan reconciliation bill to achieve a bipartisan farm bill this year. Producers need it. The livestock and poultry industry faces some very serious issues with avian influenza. While I appreciate USDA has given some thought to a new plan to fight the spread in poultry, questions remain. How will it impact trade? Does USDA have the staff to implement this strategy? I'm looking forward to hearing from our panelists today about how USDA's approach to high path will impact their operations, as well as their suggestions for how Congress can work with the Trump administration to better combat this disease. Finally, farmers are worried that trade fights and continued consolidation will hurt their bottom line. The last time this administration started a similar trade war, it cost U.S. farmers nearly $30 billion, around $1 billion of which was in part due to China launching retaliatory tariffs on U.S. pork. And we know that those producers were not made whole. At a time where family farms across this country are disappearing, policymakers should be focused on facilitating access to reliable markets and making the food you produce more affordable for hardworking American families. The tariffs on our largest trading partners that went into effect today are going to be devastating to this industry and to family paychecks across our nation.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This is a good bill.
Kentucky State Representative Jason Neems introducing House Bill 391.
And so Kentucky's rules are the second worst in the country. We have a rule that says that you can produce 150 gallons of honey in your off your own farm. And just to let you know where that is, only one state is more restrictive.
Scott Moore is with the Kentucky State Beekeepers Association.
Currently, the way the statute's written, if a beekeeper produces more than 150 gallons a year, they have to produce that in what we call certified honey house or a commercial type kitchen. It's catching a lot of beekeepers. I don't know if I can give you, and I don't know if Jessica has a number off the top of her head, but we have roughly about 3,000 beekeepers in the state of Kentucky, and it's a rough estimate. We don't have apiary registration in the state of Kentucky, so that's just through USDA surveys and things like that.
But that would be the whole everybody.
That would be everybody, and okay. And so it catches quite a few people. And over the 23 years that this law has been in effect, a lot of beekeepers adjust because a certified honey house runs upwards of six figures, about $150,000 rough estimate. So they just kind of stop producing at that 150 and go into other areas of beekeeping, such as selling bees or queens and things like that.
Jessica Mays with the State Beekeepers Association.
And I might add as well that Indiana and Ohio both have unlimited regulation. So by putting the ceiling, people have just left Kentucky to go to neighboring states where they can produce more. So,
and that's another thing I was going to mention, Mr. Chairman, is there are 24 states that have no regulation at all. This is a step toward that, hopefully. And so it's honey obviously is a very safe product, and we would like to go there ultimately. But right now we're going to the 500 with this bill.
So how many bees are we talking about?
A strong hive in the summer will have about 60,000 bees. And so if you're going to be, the average in Kentucky is around 40 to 50 pounds per hive. So, or 40 to 50 gallons per hive. So if you're this 6,000 pound limit here, you know, you're probably talking 80 to 100.
I would say
probably upwards of 100 hives to reach that 6,000. So it's, and each year you don't know, depending on, we've talked about natural disasters and obviously the environment, the food plots affect what the yields for those hives. So the honey house itself is where you bring the supers, which is where the honey is stored above the hive. So you don't bring bees into your honey house, you bring those supers in, but you're talking if there's maybe two or three supers per hive times 80 to 100 hives to bring into that honey house. So
what are the benefits?
So we did add the wording pure and unadulterated honey, because honey is the third most adulterated commodity brought into the United States. So we wanted to put that in there. And we also added that he or she produced in Kentucky, because we do want this to benefit Kentucky beekeepers and not just bottlers, because we do know there's a lot that's imported, and we want this specifically to help Kentucky beekeepers.
Moore talks about certified Kentucky honey.
Certified Kentucky Honey Producers is the marketing arm of the Kentucky State Beekeepers Association, and it is separate from Kentucky Proud. And part of our program is it's an application process. So a member would submit an application, which runs through me, and then we do apiary verification that their hives are located within Kentucky. And then we also do some testing on the back end, some random testing that we'll send out to have tested as well. So similar, but a little bit further than Kentucky Proud in a separate program.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
For more than a year, the turkey industry has been dealing with the negative impacts of highly pathogenic avian influenza, as well as another highly consequential respiratory virus, avian metapneumovirus, which has impacted between 60 and 80% of turkey flocks nationwide.
John Zimmerman is a turkey producer from Minnesota.
In Minnesota alone, 127 cases of HPAI in commercial turkeys have led to the loss of more than 6.6 million birds. And while HPAI is 100% lethal to birds exposed to the virus long enough, AMPV is more subtle but equally impactful due to its ability to significantly reduce egg sets of breeder stocks that produce the next generation of turkeys and cause severe, prolonged mortality in commercial flocks. Together, these two respiratory viruses have exponentially increased volatility, supply shortages, and market uncertainty. This 1-2 punch has caused many farmers to quit raising turkeys, with many on the brink of shutting down. Banks are very concerned about farms' financial health, and some farmers struggle to obtain credit after losing 30 to 50% of their flocks to AMPV. HPAI is a terrible disease, but with AMPV, there is no indemnity or assistance. So I would urge the committee to make AMPV an eligible disease under USDA's livestock indemnity program. This would assist growers in mitigating economic loss and will go a long way to assist poultry producers who are being hit hard, stay on their farms, producing the most abundant food supply in the world. On a more positive note, the first imported AMPV modified live vaccine doses reached Minnesota farms earlier this month, with more on the way to assist farmers nationwide. I want to personally thank members of the subcommittee for leading the charge in supporting the importation of this much-needed modified live vaccine for AMPV. I'd also like to thank USDA for their efforts in getting this across the finish line. However, I think it's important to acknowledge the industry's incredible frustrations with USDA's review process of an imported modified live vaccine. I appreciate the importance of ensuring the safety of a vaccine and that the AMP vaccine was the first of its kind to ever be approved. However, when an entire industry is at significant risk, it should take a matter of months, not more than a year, for a widely used and well-established global vaccine to be imported and available for use. I would encourage the committee to use your experience in evaluating USDA's review process to ensure a faster, more efficient response to future animal disease outbreaks. Unfortunately, AMPV is only half the battle. Time is of the essence on HPAI. A national strategy targeting all potential hosts of H5N influenza is lacking, allowing the virus to spread. The global poultry industry is in crisis. So pursuing a successful vaccination program that doesn't negatively impact trade as part of a stamp-out strategy is the key to significantly reducing disease rates. NTF is appreciative and encouraged by the robust strategy announced last week by USDA to address HPAI for egg layers. These investments in biosecurity, farmer relief, vaccine research, and the considerations for trade outlined in the plan are important steps towards stabilizing the market. However, these methods must extend beyond egg-laying operations to encompass the broader poultry sector, including the turkey industry. HPAI has devastated turkey producers, leading to significant flock losses, supply disruptions, and increased costs that directly impact consumers. A comprehensive response must recognize the unique needs of all poultry sectors, ensuring that all efforts include turkey growers. NTF supports research on finding an effective vaccine for HPAI, improving vaccine and diagnostic technology while creating a vaccination plan for commercial poultry. As vaccine technology advances, there is growing interest in using HPAI vaccine to prevent disease spread and reduce losses as part of a stamping out strategy. As a parallel approach, NTF strongly encourages USDA to renegotiate with key trading partners to minimize the implications of vaccine deployment. If the U.S. fails to lead globally on implementing animal health solutions capable of preventing disease and death in commercial poultry, we'll be at a significant business disadvantage.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's an honor to chair this hearing of the House Agriculture Committee Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry in the 119th Congress.
Tracy Mann represents the 1st District of Kansas at a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing.
As a fifth-generation Kansan, having grown up on my family farm, I rode pens and doctored thousands of sick cattle at our preconditioning feed yard. I understand the grit, tenacity, and courage that it takes to make a living in agriculture and the burden of responsibility for feeding the world that comes along with it. As we get started this morning, I want to recognize Scott Foote with Foote Cattle Company, who is in the audience with us, along with his daughter, Molly Foote. His family feeds cattle throughout the state of Kansas. He's my guest this night's State of the Union, and I appreciate him joining us this morning. Chairing this subcommittee for the second Congress in a row is a unique honor for me, as I represent the Big First, where producers sell $10 billion worth of livestock, dairy, poultry, and products like beef, milk, and eggs every year. That does not happen in a vacuum. It takes the entire animal agriculture chain to make that happen, and we see it all in the Big First District of Kansas. From the producer to the feedlot and from the harvest facility to the distributor, every role is important in delivering protein to the market and to the consumer. During the 118th Congress, members of this committee traveled the country to visit with farmers, ranchers, and agriculture producers about the need for a five-year farm bill that is long enough to provide certainty and short enough to respond to market changes. Chairman Thompson and I hosted more than 150 Kansans at a listening session in the middle of a wheat field near Gypsum, Kansas, and I suspect that many of the issues raised there will also be raised again today. I was pleased to see those issues directly addressed in the Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2024, which passed on a bipartisan basis out of this committee last year. That legislation would have maintained American food independence, invested tax dollars where we would see a return on those dollars, protected crop insurance, promoted trade programs that helped American remain competitive and secure, conducted rigorous oversight of the executive branch, promoted animal health, invested in agriculture research in America's land-grant universities, and much more. As the chairman of the subcommittee on livestock, dairy, and poultry, I was proud of that legislation. And as a Kansan, I was proud, too. I'm here to hear from you all today about what's working, what should be considered, where additional investment may be required, and where the federal government needs to just get out of your way. As time has taught us, even if well-intended, more legislation and regulation is almost never the answer. The past 4 years under the Biden administration were a perfect example of what can happen when the government gets in the way. Whether it was proposed Salmonella framework that would have increased costs for producers and consumers with no real impact on public health, its botched response to the highly pathogenic avian influenza, or water regulations, which would have put several processing facilities out of business, we must learn from these mistakes and not hamstring America's farmers, ranchers, and our ag producers.
The ranking member of the subcommittee is a farmer from California, Jim Costa.
For those of you who I've served with, I've had the privilege to serve with over the years, what I say is not new. I've never been a fan of tariffs, regardless if it's a Democratic or Republican administration. I just think that there are attacks on American consumers, there are attacks on producers, and everyone has leverage in that game. And by the way, I remember being a part of the effort to rebrand NAFTA, NAFTA 2, or the United States-Mexico-Canada Accord, which was at the time when I voted for it and supported it on a bipartisan fashion, heard that it was the greatest, best trade deal ever known to mankind. And my gosh, if that were the case, tariffs on two of our biggest trading partners, Canada and Mexico. By the way, it's subject for review next year.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, the cow slaughter's coming down. I mean, it's kind of what we would expect as we're moving towards this idea of herd rebuilding.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel.
We've had very strong culling rates the last couple of years. We set a record in 2022. Last year's net culling rate, if you look at cow slaughter divided by the cattle the cow inventory for beef cows, was about just about average, about the long run average. So coming down from higher than average to an average level, it'll probably continue down as we move towards the idea of herd rebuilding. Culling is going to drop to a minimal level. And of course, the big question last year, which carries over into this year, is when are we going to start saving heifers? And again, we'll have to see what USDA's annual inventory numbers tell us at the end of the month. But it doesn't look like certainly that we did anything last year in 2024, and we may not be set up to do a great deal in 2025. When we do see it, of course, that's going to squeeze things even tighter from a feeder cattle supply standpoint when we start saving those heifers and not sending them all to the feedlot. So that's why we've got these strong prices now. We've got record high prices, and you know, there's every indication that they're going to go higher yet. Which is a little bit scary thing for a market analyst to say. You know, certainly someday we would expect to see a backside to this thing, but that backside is probably three or more years out at this point. We're going to continue to see elevated prices for an extended period of time going forward, certainly for 2025.
And admits cow-calf producers are in the driver's seat.
It's an exciting time, kind of scary good in some ways, but really good. Particularly for the cow-calf folks. They're in the driver's seat right now. The market's really rewarding cow-calf production and trying to incentivize rebuilding that herd. Other sectors of the market, there's some margin challenges because most of what the stocker guys are buying is going up farther and faster than what they're selling. And the same is true at the feedlot level. The feeder cattle prices are going up farther and faster than the fed cattle prices, or at least in general, that's the trend in this kind of market. So there'll be some margin challenges for all of those folks above the cow-calf level, and certainly a lot of reason for everybody to do some risk management in a world where we're at record levels, but we're also subject to a tremendous amount of volatility and uncertainty that would come from outside the cattle industry predominantly. So it's important to continue to do risk management.
Jonathan Schell is Kentucky's Ag Commissioner. Talks about what's ahead for his department and state.
We're putting a huge focus on our shows and fairs, even more so than has ever been put in the past, trying to grow that program. As many of you all know, one of the indicators that we use for shows and fairs is how many livestock are in the state fair. And we've been seeing a decline in that for the past 5 to 6 years. What we're hoping to do is to stop the bleeding, so to speak, to where that we can then start increasing with our 4-H participants across the state of Kentucky and our FFA and our livestock. One of the things that we're doing to show that we're putting a larger focus on that is we have actually started, there's not really a Super Bowl for Kentucky Proud in the livestock shows. And so this year in Casey County, we're going to be having the Livestock Classic, which will be the Super Bowl for Kentucky Proud kids to be able to go and do it. One of the things that we're doing also is we're trying to take the focus, not necessarily on the animals, but on the kids themselves. Because what we find is that at times, you know, if you can buy a $15,000 animal, you can win a show. But these kids, a lot of them are blue collar kids that are out in the state. They're doing their hardest. They're working as hard as they possibly can to showcase not only their animals, but their showmanship and the things that are going along with it. And so we're trying to put a bigger focus on these kids and how we actually operate with inside of shows and fairs. And so in doing so, we're trying to find those efficiencies. We're trying to consolidate where we can across the department so that we can put a greater and better focus on our livestock shows and fairs.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our fragile food supply chain, as I have always said, as a third-generation farmer in California, started off in the dairy business, my family did, know how to milk cows and a few other things, are, I think, witnessed by the impact that we've seen that food, as I always say in every committee hearing, is a national security issue. It is.
Ranking member of a House Ag Subcommittee on Livestock, Dairy, and Poultry, California Representative Jim Costa.
Majority of Americans, they don't necessarily think about it because they go to the grocery store and all the food in the world's there and their favorite fast food or restaurants. But it is a national security issue, an international security issue, as we've seen Russia weaponize grain in this Ukraine war after their attack. So today we're going to hear from producers on how fragile our food supply is. We can't take it for granted. We had experiences, all of us did, during the COVID-19 pandemic that demonstrated how fragile our food supply system is and how emergencies like the pathogenic avian flu can impact industries across the nation, especially our poultry and dairy industries. As I reflect today, I'd be remiss not to mention the continued challenges from producers in my district as they have concerned about terminations of critical civil service staff within the United States Department of Agriculture's Ag Research Service, Natural Resources Conservation Services, the Animal Plant and Health Inspection Services, AFID, and much more. This includes firings of people who were working on avian flu response, trying to help producers recover while dealing with preventing the next pandemic. This administration now is trying to figure out how to hire those workers back. I think that's evidence that even they know that it was misguided and poorly timed. This continues to be a grave concern of my district and constituents. Let me give you some other examples quickly, and I'll allow our witnesses to tell us what they want us to know. We've had delays in payments from the Emergency Livestock Program, helping producers impacted by the high path avian flu. In California, only 1% of our dairies have received their payments in California. That's not right. Delays in payments for conservation services, leaving farmers in question as whether or not they want to move forward with key projects to help sustain themselves and equip programs and the like. Delays in key research that requires 24/7, such as those at USDA Ag Research Services. These are things that I'm hearing from my constituents here, and you couple that with the issue of the potential impact of tariffs and mass deportation. And I can tell you, in farm country in California, folks are concerned. The testimonies today that we're looking forward to hearing will talk about investing in the next generation's workforce. It's critical that we retain the talented people in the United States Department of Agriculture to ensure resilience and security of our food supply chain. California continues to be, as you know, the largest ag-producing state in the nation, $58 billion last year at the farm gate with over 300 commodities. I have the honor and privilege, along with my other colleagues in the Valley, to represent parts of Fresno and Tulare County, two of the top ag-producing counties in the state and in the nation. We're proud of that fact, like you're proud, Mr. Chairman, of your production in your home district as well. And so trade will continue to play a role in this Congress, and I look forward to working with my colleagues in a bipartisan, comprehensive effort on trade agreements and getting a bipartisan farm bill, as you stated on the outset,
and we need to get that work done here this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Addressing agricultural challenges of today. The subject of this year's USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum plenary panel. And the panelists provided several examples of challenges.
The margins that our producers are facing with softening of markets and input costs.
Uncertainty, labor, and risk management.
Every farm, whether it's going to rain or it's not going to rain, whether you're going to have a pest or whether the cow is going to actually be sick. And in addition to that, worry about the price.
And that is just for starters. However, panelists also provided some potential solutions to address both general and specific ag-oriented challenges, as well as offer bright spots in the ag sector.
More adoption of precision ag technologies, maybe more on the water use.
Encouraging development of value-added and vertically integrating by farmers.
We have actually cheese consumption not only here in the United States growing, but actually expanding worldwide.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.